to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents.
You feel that?
Hold on to your butts.
A Steven Spielberg film.
Fences are failing all over the park.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
An adventure.
Look out! Go!
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
65 million years in the making. Jurassic Park.
What's going on, guys? I'm Alex. Welcome to another episode of the BSR Show. We are the Black Series Rebels. With me, as always, is my boy, Stephen Ellis.
Not the magic word.
And joining us this week, a very special guest. It's Dan from 4 Years Strong, and the man's got butterfingers.
How you doing?
Good, buddy. When we reached out to you, and you picked Jurassic Park, you absolutely made my fucking summer. You made my month. This is now we're right in the sweet pocket of my movie fandom. We're so excited to have you. We always start off with the same first question, which is, what's your first memory of Jurassic Park entering your life?
I was 8 years old when this movie came out. So it was June or July when it came out.
June 1993.
There you go. Thank you. June. I was at Cape Cod, Massachusetts with my family on vacation. And, you know, I had seen,
how Spielbergian.
Yeah.
You were in a whole Spielbergian mood.
Oh yeah. Always in the mood. But you know, I had seen all of the merch starting to come out and the, like, I think it was like McDonald's cups. And I mean, Jurassic Park was one of the first movies to really hit that, like, everywhere. Like, everywhere you looked was Jurassic Park stuff for me. Like, at an 8 year old, obviously there was like Ninja Turtles and stuff, but like, I didn't notice it quite like I did with Jurassic Park. I remember being blown away when I found out they had like Jurassic Park candy at the movie theater. I was like, this is insane. They have their own candy. So, you know, I'm at the Cape, and my, you know, my family, we all went to see Jurassic Park, and I didn't know a ton about it other than obviously there were dinosaurs in it. And I feel like when I saw this movie, it was the first movie that really took me out of, you know, just mainly enjoying just like kid movies. Like, I feel like the year before was like, I think it was, I mean, like Batman Returns came out, which was like a big one, but like Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, like that's what I was into as a 7 year old. And then when I'm eight, I see Jurassic Park and it just blew my mind. I mean, everything about it was perfect. It was the first time I noticed, the music in a movie just being incredible. Like the music matched every scene perfectly. It was the first time that, you know, I think it was the first time I heard CGI, just the letters CGI put together. Like, I feel like that was the first time I ever heard about it. And it just set me on a path of movie loving for the rest of my life.
I mean, if there's one movie that's going to set you on a path of movie. Oh, Steve just popped up the photo of the cups. Were these McDonald's, Steve-o?
I think these are at the theater, weren't they?
These were McDonald's.
Oh, they were. I think I had this Dilophosaurus one.
I know for sure I had the T-Rex with the Ford.
Yeah.
And that was like probably a prized possession for 2 months as a child. But at that time feels like fucking 4 years because time is relative to how old you are. Dan, our ages line up pretty close. I was born in 86 and you said 1993 for this, yep. Steve, or four? Yep.
June 11th, 1993.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I was, I guess I would have been just turned seven. So like right in your zone. And yeah, man, I'm right there with you. This is the first, I mean, Terminator 2 is a little different. I had no fucking idea what it was. And my dad was like, well, I'm just going to take this kid to see this rated R movie that he's got no business seeing. This one felt like it was, I was of age to fully appreciate it and take it in. What about you, Steve? First memories of Jurassic Park entering your sphere.
Well, I've talked about it a few times on this show. You know, I, as a kid, so I was born in 1982. I was 11 years old. I was just about to turn 11 or 12 when this movie came out. I can't do math, obviously. And I used to watch on the E channel. And this was back in the day when E was, like, very heavily movie. Like, it was always, like, the interviews and shit on the weird couches in the early 90s. And I used
it was
to,
the promo channel
it was,
at that time.
Exactly what promo. It was. It's exactly what it was. And they used to have a show called Coming Attractions on there that would be every Sunday it would air. And it was like the latest trailers that dropped.
Welcome back to Coming Attractions, where the trailers are the features. I'm Todd Newton.
And it was just, it was my jam on Sundays to watch that. And I'll never forget the first trailer. And it was just the water rippling. And then
on the cup?
That's all it was. And it was the footsteps that you heard. And it was like a 30-second thing. And that's all it was. That's all it was. And then it just was like the Steven Spielberg Jurassic Park coming soon.
So this is why I was so excited for Dan to pick this movie, because this movie probably more so than any other movie probably sets my life on the trajectory that it would turn into. So I've never talked about it on this show, but my uncle Mike, Michael Backus, his best friend was, when he was still alive, Michael Crichton. So it's like I have a weird familial connection to this movie. Awesome. I remember being very young and my dad had the white paperback of Jurassic Park that had been sent to him by my uncle, and it was signed like by Michael Crichton, and it was like, here you go, Mark. Excited to have you enjoy the book. And I remember my dad was like, your uncle Mike is working on the movie that's about this. So my uncle Mike worked in special effects. He did some work at ILM. So he worked in the special effects supervising department. I don't even know exactly where he lines up. I'm sure whatever it was, Michael Crichton was like, this is my buddy Mike. Fucking find him a job, Steven. And they were like, whatever. Have him make some schedules. But I say that tongue in cheek. He had worked on like The Abyss, James Cameron's Abyss, and worked on a couple movies leading up to Jurassic Park. But like, this was kind of his first big, like, I say it in quotes, like Hollywood moment. So as a family, we all went to go watch Uncle Mike's movie, Jurassic Park, so you could see his name in the credits. And I remember watching that movie and then seeing his name and just going, yeah, I have to do that. I have to do what my Uncle Mike does. Like that, like that's it. Like I like the power this man just wielded over this whole, like he has very small part in making of the movie, but enough for me to be like, that's so cool that he got to work on this thing. And I remember, like, you know, I don't know, Dan, if you can relate to this, but like I was like a kid that was a, you know, skateboarder, punk rock kid that just kind of fucked around and really only liked movies and music. And I think there was a time when my dad was like, Mike, you got to come fucking talk to my kid. He doesn't do anything all day. I need to get him some direction. And he admires you because of what you do and the career that you have. And Uncle Mike flew. Actually, my dad and I went to LA to like spend the weekend with him, and he got me this like how to make movies like children's book when I was probably like 10. And I remember in his house, he fucking had an animatronic raptor.
What?
From, from the movie. And I was just like, what is, and he, like, my Uncle Mike's got a crazy fucking story, right? He lived up in the hills of Hollywood, and like, it really was like, his house was like props and shit from all the movies. And then like, he since then had some problems and no longer works in Hollywood. And like, he's estranged. Like, I haven't seen him in probably like 10, 15 years, but like, I'll always kind of remember that moment where I was like, man, my Uncle Mike's the fucking coolest. And now it's like totally down to reality when it comes to Uncle Mike. But at the time, Jurassic Park, I thought was like the coolest. Yeah. So Steve just popped on the screen. This is the book that Dr. Alan Grant wrote. And that's my uncle, Michael Backus, is the co-writer with Dr. Alan Grant, is like a fun little Easter egg.
That's so cool.
So like that. And the other big thing is when you look at all the computer screens, it'll say programmed by Michael Backus. So he programmed in, I say that in quotes, like programmed all of the security systems. So Jurassic Park has been a big part of my life. And I watch it. I would say, I don't know about you, Steve. I'm up to 2 a year on Jurassic Park. What about you, Dan? What's your go-to on?
Yeah, 2 a year sounds pretty good. There've definitely been, you know, 3. It's always in the summer for me. Like it always, especially because I saw it, you know, when I was at the Cape. I always get this urge to watch it when I go on, you know, when I go to the Cape every summer. I'm from Massachusetts. It's basically the tropics to us, even though it's 3 hours away. But we, you know, anytime it's like one of those things just pops into my brain that I just have to watch Jurassic Park. And I've actually gone a couple times because there's a drive-in really close to where I stay. And there's a couple times during the summer where they put Jurassic Park and they like will pair it with like, you know, Last Crusade or something like that. And I'll just go and just watch both those movies in the drive-in. It's awesome.
What about you, Steve? How often are you landing your helicopter on the island, Isla Nublar?
I mean, easily 3 times, but honestly, man, this is a movie Amber and I love. My wife and I love.
This is my wife's favorite movie too.
Yeah.
So like, this is just this one. When you talk about summer blockbusters, we talked a lot about the importance of Jaws. We've talked a lot about how, like, Jaws obviously is the godfather, and not the godfather, but the godfather of the summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
For me, I would make the argument that Jurassic Park is the peak of all summer blockbusters.
Well, it's firing all, it fires on all cylinders in a way that, yes, it Jaws walked so that Jurassic Park could fucking soar, baby.
Yeah.
could charge
in fact,
through a
in fact,
money
let me
rating.
Rephrase that. Jaws swam so that fucking this thing could fucking go to the moon, baby, because it's firing on all cylinders in a way that it's got the element like Jaws and what it does there and how the audience reaction to it all and gets scared, right? But it also has the special effects that we talk about. It's got the fucking merchandising machine behind it, from the cups to the toys to the, I mean, the merchandise was a commercial within the movie.
Yeah.
You know? And so this just, it's all of it. It took what Jaws did. It took what Star Wars did. It took the formula, right? It took the formula and just, I don't know.
So let's talk about the formula, right? Because this movie, I feel like we can break down every chunk of it. I know, Dan, you mentioned the music. Well, for sure, you can't talk about Jurassic Park without talking about the music. But I think the best way to talk about this movie is literally just to go like piece by piece in how it's assembled, because it's perfect. There isn't even Steve tried to tell me some problem about some geography, and I was like, fuck, get it out of my face. There's not a problem with this movie. The movie is flawless. So let's, Dan, when you think about Jurassic Park, what is the first thing that like stands out as perfection for you?
Well, I mean, I think one of the best parts about the movie and one of the best parts about Spielberg movies is the characters. I mean, that's kind of the cool. I mean, it's a dinosaur movie, but every character has their own, you know, arc and their own story that the subplot just makes sense the entire way. And I think it's just such a tight script too.
Tight, like, and right, dude. Exactly. The script is tight and right.
There's nothing in there that there's only one scene in the whole movie that I don't, it's not that I don't love it. It's just, I remember watching it as a little bit of adult and be like, oh, this is the little kid part. And that's when the dinosaur sneezes on Lex in the tree. That's like the one, that's the one part where every time, all I'm right, like, yeah, okay, it's okay.
I'll hear that argument. I'll hear
you
that
know,
argument.
It's funny that you say that about character, because I was reading some stuff today when I was doing the research, and Peter Travers, famous, you know, movie critic,
Rolling Stone,
and Roger Ebert, as well as several other, you know, critics at the time, praised the music, praised Spielberg, praised the special effects, but they all basically just blasted the acting and the characters and the lack of character development.
I feel that really this movie, though, is a missed opportunity, because what he doesn't have here, and what I really missed from a movie by Spielberg like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, wow, is the sense of awe, mm-hmm, the sense of majesty. These creatures are back, and it's amazing. And yes, right away, after an opening shot that has a little of that,
yes, it does,
the movie disintegrates basically into a monster picture where the dinosaurs are chasing everybody and the people are running away and there's lots of action, yeah, and lots of screaming, but there's not really any opportunity to really give these creatures their due. It's almost like the movie doesn't have any respect for the intelligence of the audience that they might really be interested in dinosaurs.
And I sat there scratching my head going, is this because I was 11 years old when I saw this movie, or, and I just have watched it so much that I have a deep, like, love for every single character?
No, man, the characters are the way that their sub stories affect the other ones in the journey is just amazing. Like the fact that, you know, Grant from the beginning is talking about, you know, not wanting to have kids, and that's his whole big thing. And then the entire movie is about creating life and where the responsibility comes from that. And by the end of the movie, he becomes a guy who's like down with kids and down with families. Like everything in those subplots is just amazing.
100%. I mean, when we were just talking about how tight and right the script is, yeah, it comes from a pacing thing and an editing thing and the way Spielberg efficiently tells the story. But more importantly, like you said, no scenes feel wasted. Mm-hmm. Every actor feels like they're firing. Really, I mean, I jokingly said the movie's perfect. I'll throw out the one thing that bugs me, and it's Laura Dern limping away from the thing. And like, I'm like, she gets away from a fucking velociraptor and she's like, run. And she's like limping with the cable around her foot. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously there's moments where this movie becomes a summer blockbuster. Every movie like this has that.
If we're going to, if we all are going to name one, mine was always the hacker thing.
Oh yeah. I'm a hacker.
But that's a 90s thing.
That was like,
we'll make him a hacker.
Nah, man, you had to have a hacker in a 90s movie, or what were you doing? Like, hacker was like a pillar of Hollywood storytelling from like 92. We talked about this. John Connor hacks the ATM machine. She's a hacker. And then what's the, there's a, obviously the Matrix is like peak hacker movie. Well, they just made a whole movie about.
Check this out, guy. This is insanely great. It's got a 28.8 BPS modem.
I see that and I poo-poo that. That's like Mafia in the late 70s. It had to be in a movie.
Every movie had a hacker. I was gonna bring out more examples of the dude from Twister.
Oh, that's right. Like all, right. Yep.
Always,
yes.
But like even like little kid movies, there was always just this random part where one kid that had no other lines Donatello. About being a hacker at one point would just show up and just pull up to a computer. Oh, well, Lex. At the end of the scene, like, she talks about liking computers at like the beginning, but then she turns everything else on during the thing. Like, there's so many hacking moments in this movie.
What does she say? She goes,
it's a Unix system. I know this. It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything. I gotta find the right file.
Try to reach the gun.
It's a Unix system. I know this. First of all, okay, hold on. Like, all right, if we're gonna pick some nits, like, they spared no expense. This little child is able to fully navigate your security system with like no sweat. But I don't even want to, like,
let's just get into
all,
it.
That's the beauty and the charm of this movie. So, all right, we talked about the characters, and obviously they've got their little moments, but and I guess Roger Ebert knows what he's talking about. But I'm also going to say, like, the characters have stood the test of time. And I think it's safe to say that, like, Dr. Ian Malcolm is probably one of the coolest characters. Are you okay? Are you team Malcolm or are you team Grant? Starting with you, Dan.
I'm definitely team Malcolm. And what's interesting about it is I wouldn't pair Malcolm with Grant. I would pair Malcolm with Hammond. Like, I feel like they were definitely the kind of, you know, you've got Malcolm in black, you've got Hammond in white, you've got Malcolm who's all about chaos, and then you have Hammond who's all about order and making sure this whole thing goes off. I always felt like they were kind of the counterbalance, like the god and devil on like the shoulders of this whole thing.
Well, and they had a great like rapport with each other, just in the small scenes they share in the whole.
Yeah.
You do plan on having dinosaurs on the dinosaur tour. You know, just the whole fucking, I really hate that man. And, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I mean, that scene alone right there is like, I want that 30-minute episode every week for that sitcom with those two.
Oh, yeah. Them bickering in the helicopter at the beginning, too. Right. Is
oh. What about you, Steve? You team Grant, team Malcolm?
I want to say I'm like, I got 1 foot on Grant and 1 foot on Malcolm.
Coward.
Like, I
make
always,
a choice,
I
mean, coward.
I think I'm team Ian because he's just so fucking cool.
Well, I'm going to, as a kid, I for sure liked Grant more. I don't know that I fully appreciated the power of Dr. Ian Malcolm. I'm going to throw a curveball. You know what team I am? I'm team the quads of the guy that hunts the raptors. That dude's legs are legit.
Shoot her.
Like, that guy must squat a buck. Like, that guy's squatting at least 600. That man is nothing but pure meat and just a, like, and it's like Spielberg knew. He's like, get him the shortest shorts we can find because this guy's fucking quads are blasted. Like, honestly, I bet the T-Rex would run from him if she got a good look at that man's quads, because he's carved. I'm just saying.
I had the action figure of that guy, and his calves were big in the action figure as well. So
maybe they did the original sculpt, and like someone from Kenner came in and they're like, hold on a second. Have you looked at this guy's fucking legs? Nah, man, you got to throw at least a solid couple more inches of plastic on those bad boys. This guy's meaty. Okay. So we talked about characters. Let's Steve, what's something else that sticks out to you when you think Jurassic Park? Like, you always like really appreciate this about it.
Oh God, dude. It's the whole movie. It's the whole package. It's, you know, fuck, it's another John Williams banger. That is,
let's talk about it.
You want to talk about character? Here's another great example where John Williams' music and his score is
a main character.
It's a main character.
Absolutely.
You know, like, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, we can't not do this, but just this right here, I get chills.
Throw it on.
The fact that this guy figured out how to make music that sounds like fucking dinosaurs is insane to me. Like, when I hear that, it sounds like I'm looking over a landscape and there's fucking dinosaurs walking. That's what it sounds like. It's insane.
Now, Dan, you said that this was kind of the first time that you really took stock in the music of a movie.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're a musician by trade. Can you speak a little bit to that? Like, what level of impact did that really have?
I mean, it was the first time where I remember sitting and watching this movie, and even I think, if I remember correctly, I think you hear like a lot of those themes like right at the beginning too, before a lot of things even kind of kick off, before you and I remember hearing it, and just first of all, it's an unbelievably beautiful score, and John Williams has these really cool ways of writing, a score that fits perfectly in a specific part, but it always has this like B side, like this B melody. And it's always mm-hmm. just one of the coolest parts. And this one has it as well. Same with Jaws, like where you have, you know, the dun, 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 but then it goes to the second part. That's
the little flute part where the flute starts jamming out.
It's amazing. Yeah. And this was one of the, I mean, I grew up in like a musical household, so I knew about like themes for characters and stuff, but I feel like this was one of the first times I really heard a lot of these themes happening and like taking stock of them happening in real time. John Williams has always been just a huge fan for me. I feel like John Williams is what really defined a lot of my favorite movies when I was growing up. I mean, that character of John Williams' scores being in those movies is what drew me to a lot of those movies, like Star Wars and Jaws and Indiana Jones and, you know, Superman, and all that stuff.
It's interesting. Very few artists or people, I feel like, are as universally beloved, and really, you can't really knock, like, there's people that'll knock Spielberg. There's people that can knock George Lucas. There's people like, I don't feel like you ever hear anyone be like, come on, overrated. John Williams, come on, stop it.
I mean, that's like not an argument in good faith. Like, that's just like anybody that were to say like John Williams, his scores are overrated, I'd be like, your opinion is null and void. But like, and it's not that like,
but that's my point.
You're a robot.
Like that's my point is like there's very few human beings that can do that.
It's just it's one thing to have an opinion, and it's another thing to just go against what is just universally true. Like to say that he really does everything he touches, he elevates, and that's his real gift. You know, every movie you mentioned, Dan, Jaws, Indiana Jones, you know, I mean, obviously Star Wars, like all of those movies, some people, the first thing they think of are the themes from the movies. For me, like, I don't know about you guys, but like what's wild to me is that everybody has there are no lyrics to this main Jurassic Park theme, but we all know the fucking words as kids. We all went Jurassic Park, Jurassic Park, dinosaurs. We all fucking sang that as kids because it didn't need words, because it was so catchy, and we just kind of like attributed the visual to it, and that like everyone, Star Wars, like, Star Wars, like that's what his music does.
Dan, as a musician, like, you know, I'm sure you or your bandmates or whatnot, you know, get an idea for a riff or get an idea for something, and you file it away, right? And eventually, maybe you pull it out for a album or whatever. But I'm thinking about John Williams. I'm like, do you think he's just got this Jurassic Park thing just like sitting for like 10 years in a file? And he's like, you know, I think that thing might work here.
No, I from what I've gathered, like researching John Williams a fair amount. He's definitely like the kind of guy who just sits at a piano and just comes up with just that main little melody, and then just brings in like Spielberg, a director, be like, this is what I'm thinking for the dinosaurs. And Spielberg's like, fuck yeah, that's perfect. You know what I mean? It's crazy that a person can have that much. I want talent is such kind of a throwaway word, but just like have enough of a mind to like, when you're working with film, that they can create these moments in the film that live on forever without even, you don't even have to see the picture. You can just close your eyes, hear the song, you know exactly where you are in that movie. And there's only certain scores that can do that. I mean, there's, you know, dime a dozen, there's just the tension note that holds underneath something about to happen. And, you know, it's not memorable. It's just something to hold the space right there. But every note that John Williams puts into his scores is there for a reason and a purpose. And that's what makes it so special.
The other power of specifically Jurassic Park is two thoughts here. Is one that he visits it in so many different arrangements, and it has a different emotional beat every time he does it. And that's crazy too, right? Like Again, I'm no musical expert, Dan, so please slap me if I'm incorrect here. But it's like, you know, if you want someone to feel sad, you hit the minor chord, or you hit those sad dissonant chords that give you that feeling. But something about Jurassic Park, you can play it in just different like sonic motifs, and he can give you like, there's such a different feeling between the whole orchestra doing that theme and you see the dinosaur for the first time and then the helicopter flying away. And it's just gentle on the piano with the birds flying. And you're like, how am I, like, it's the same melody, but he's able to move the heartstrings in such an interesting way. It's just like, is this peak John Williams? Is this like, after this, does he have a score that we feel is like, as, I guess, Harry Potter?
Harry Potter's, that's what I was going to bring up, is probably the closest, most memorable one that came after that jumps into my brain. But
because I don't count the Star Wars prequels. Right, those are like the Star Wars lexicon, and that's kind of speaking the same language. But yeah, I guess
although Duel of the Fates was a pretty impressive new.
Again.
Yeah.
Like something you hear and you're just like, I see lightsabers. I see the trailer. I see, like, you can't. The visuals are married to his music.
He it's like he comes up with a melody that tells the whole story in the melody, and he's able to put it anywhere he wants within the score, and it's still telling the same story.
Totally. You know, we jumped on sort of like that, you see the visuals when you hear this music. I'd love to talk about the visuals of this movie, because this is one of those movies where everybody says the same thing. How does it fucking still look good now? And I think we know the answer to that. But Steve, you want to speak to that a little bit? What is it about Jurassic Park that makes specifically the visual effects still timeless?
I think that, you know, you always hear me bitching and screaming on this show about, you know, I always feel that CGI and practical should always be what's being used. It shouldn't just all be CGI. It shouldn't also just be all practical. But I feel like this was, while it was pushing the envelope and it had to use as much practical as it did because of the time. But, you know, there's 14 minutes of practical and then 9 minutes of CGI dinosaur in total. Dinosaur shots in this movie,
which is crazy. I would have thought that it's like at least 30 minutes.
And you know, I've noticed that I tend to enjoy movies that use practical and then use the CGI when necessary, and also uses it to help clean up and marry the two effects together to pull off a shot. My interest and my attention doesn't get broken by the lack of, or the too much of, with the CGI. So in terms of on an effects level, this movie just, I don't know, they just used it right. And you had all the major people. You had Stan Winston, you had Phil Tippett, you had Dennis Muren, you had all the guys that really, Michael fucking Backus. you had all the guys at the just at the top of all parts of their fields. You know, you had Phil Tippett, who it's well documented about how bummed he is. In fact, I remember always seeing in the first sort of behind the scenes when this movie first started to come out, and it was him and a bunch of guys all behind a computer. And the scene before, it's him like building and using the mechanical sort of puppet to show the movement that he could do for this stop motion, because he was planning to do all this stop motion work for the movie. And then they're like, they come and grab him. They're like, check this out. And they take what he did with his movement and his stop motion, and they used his technique in a digital program. And that's how they created the famous scene with I forget the proper name for the dinosaur, but where they're running through the valley with them. And
Gallimimus.
Yes. And he's you can see the look on his face like, shit.
Nerd.
I'm fucking.
I hit you with a nerd.
Gallimimus. you see Tippett just kind of go, fuck, I'm out of a job. You know, he gets really bummed because here he was thinking he was going to do all this stop motion for it, and now the computers are doing it for him. And
it mirrors Grant when, you know, in a couple of years when I'm going to have to dig anymore, you know?
Yeah, it totally, it's, so I'm a big geek for a lot of that stuff. And I think that it never am I taken out of the movie by the effect. In fact, the effect makes me that much more immersed in the movie.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned, very specifically, we're not going to have to dig anymore. Right. And that to me plays into some of the themes of this movie. And I think that's what always really gets me the most about Jurassic Park is how universal a movie about dinosaurs feels to the human experience. Like, here are these scientists that are obsessed with the past being confronted by their future, trying to find their place in the order that is our world. And like you said, Grant is coping with the fact of his own humanity. Does he want to have kids? What is the value of that? Do I spend time focused on these things that don't even exist anymore? And then what happens if they're thrust directly into his life? He looks inward and thinks about what it means to be a human, not as much what it means to be obsessed with these things, right? Mm-hmm. And this, for me, is when a Spielberg movie, when it can click into this pace and rhythm. There's a few of them, like obviously Jaws, E.T., Raiders. These are the, even Hook to a certain extent, but Jurassic, like, really just becomes this timeless story about, for me, it's what does it mean to be human on this planet? And what is our role? And every time I watch it, the older I get, the movie starts to become about something else. And that's really cool. That's the sign of a fucking good movie, right? Like, same with a good album. When you listen to it as a kid, you're like, man, this fucking punk band rules. And then you listen to it as an adult, you're like, damn, dude, they were talking about like Reaganism and like, you know what I mean? Like, that's really like, I wasn't expecting like this political masterpiece, but now I'm really starting to understand it. Like, I always laugh. I call it the Revolver effect. It's like when you listen to Revolver as an adult, you're like, whoa, this is wild. As opposed to when you're a kid, you're like, this is fun, man. We're all on a yellow submarine. But as an adult, you're like, dude, these guys were on some mind-altering things, and they made, and not that that's what Jurassic Park is, but Jurassic Park for me represents that style of art where every time you arrive at it, you take something different from it, and it could even be more profound than the last time you plugged into it. And that to me is where this movie really sings. And you know, I think the best thing is just to start going through some of our favorite moments and just start rapid firing. Dan, I know you probably have a ton. Oh, no, chime in on that.
Well, I wanted to, at the end of your, to chime in on what you were saying. This last time that I watched it, it was actually kind of interesting because like what I really took from it was just like the brute force of like nature, like will always beat like technology and intelligence. And it was just crazy to watch that movie in a now, like, I mean, not post, but like post, like after last year of just that happening, of just like this Whoa. Virus coming out and just crushing, you know, all this technology, everything that we had built up to this point, and now we're all just, you know, stuck inside. Like a lot of those things, you know, were coming, and there's a lot of themes in this movie that are still very relevant today with, you know, like genetic manipulation, chaos, and cloning, chaos, like all this kind of stuff. And I was watching it being like, man, it's crazy that this movie in 1993 is still just so relevant today after a global pandemic as it was in 93.
Well, what's crazy is Crichton had the original idea for it in like 1979. And like the whole, like, instead of there being a space race, sort of this like bio race to commercialize DNA.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a lot of what, because I've read the book, and I feel like one of the main themes in the book was I mean, the theme is in there in the movie as well, but I feel like it felt more on the humans playing God and not to put as much stock in technology, because like it felt like there was a little bit more of a like a higher power that needs respect more than nature, as the movie kind of puts it. But yeah,
that's interesting. I have this is one of the few movies that I didn't have time to revisit before we recorded, but I'd seen it so many times. Like, yeah. I'm going to be okay if I just scrub through this. I'll be able to plug in. I can have a really long talk about Jurassic Park. And now you just fucking blew my mind with watching it through the lens of 2020 and everything that just happened. Now I'm like, all right, we're going to wrap up here in like 30 minutes. All right, I'll probably.
He's like, fuck Succession. He's like, fuck Succession. Yeah.
You really like, all right, it's a family that treats each other like shit. Let's go to some dinos. Like, yeah, like, so, oh man, that is really interesting. And it speaks to the point that we're talking about, is that this movie is absolutely timeless and grows with its audience and grows. And it's one of the few franchises, and we don't need to get into the other movies, but this movie is not tainted, no matter how crazy and weird Jurassic Park movies get. Like, yeah, you don't see people going, oh God, why don't they just leave Jurassic Park alone? It's like, Jurassic Park is a masterpiece. And then you got the other fucking dinosaur movies. And like, it's a rare thing where, like, you know, everybody's nervous about Indy 5. It's like, oh, Indy 5. No one was worried about Jurassic World. They're like, nah, whatever. It'll be rad. It'll be whatever.
It's dinosaurs.
It's dinosaurs. It has this like slippery ability to not let like the like expectations kind of like hamper it down. And it's one of the few blockbusters that has that ability. Like, Indy has it. Obviously, Star Wars has it. Many of that. Like, it doesn't matter what Star Wars movie they make, people are going to be pissed off about it.
Yep.
Marvel's getting there, but Marvel just has such a good track record, but it'll happen. Like, they'll, yeah, Marvel's going to fumble a few times. Everyone's going to be like, oh, fucking Marvel's done.
I feel like that what Marvel has going for them is the fact they're putting out 4 movies a year plus TV shows. So you only have a little bit of time to be pissed off about it for you.
Yeah, it's true. Off about, yeah, something else. Yeah. It's like, oh, you didn't like your appetizer? Here comes your burger, bro. Like, it's just, they're so quick.
It's funny, 'cause I feel like, The Lost World. That was the second one, right? Lost World.
Oh yeah.
Yes. That's dinosaurs. Gymnastics. Dinosaurs arrive in San Diego.
That, yes, was. I feel like that was the first time that I had my anticipation for a movie just dashed, like, in front of me on the screen. Because I got so into Jurassic Park that I read the book, but then I also read Lost World, which is actually more of like a, if I remember, I think it's a prequel in the book, and then it's like, yeah, a sequel in the, and I remember being so fucking stoked to see this movie and then walking out of the theater just so bummed out. And I feel like that was the first time that really happened to me.
Well, it's funny that you talk about being so into the movie and dinosaurs, because I think I read somewhere that like after this movie for years, and even to this day, like paleontology, kids that go to school to learn about paleontology just fucking went through the roof.
Well, yeah, because who doesn't want to be an Indiana Jones type running around with T-Rexes? Like, nobody tells you that Indiana Jones's real job is fucking like
grading papers
and like, you know, going to walk around like a dig in Egypt and like, all right, I'm going to take this carbon and I'm going to apply it to this thing and I'm going to find out where it's from. And everyone thinks being a paleontologist is you get to play with raptors all day, but the truth is you dig out in the middle of Utah, you might get lucky to find like one femur of a stegosaurus.
Yeah, and then your job is to figure out what the dinosaur looked like based off of that, and it's always fucking wrong.
Yeah, and then some asshole scientist 20 years later is like, motherfucker, these things got feathers, you punk, yeah, bitch.
Alan Grant was right.
Alan Grant was right. They got feathers.
They are from birds.
Let's get into some scenes, yeah, that we love. Dan, right out the gate, throw one out. What's a scene that like every time it's on, you just have to stop and focus in on it?
I would say the T-Rex scene, because that's like the definite one, but the scene where they're digging up the raptor at the beginning and there's the kid.
Oh,
who Grant just has to lean on First of all, whose fucking kid is this?
That doesn't look very scary. More like a 6-foot turkey.
Turkey, huh?
Oh, no.
Okay. Try to imagine yourself in the Cretaceous period. You get your first look at this 6-foot turkey as you enter a clearing. He moves like a bird, lightly bobbing his head. And you keep still because you think that maybe his visual acuity is based on movement, like T-Rex, and he'll lose you if you don't move. But no, not Velociraptor. You stare at him, and he just stares right back. And that's when the attack comes, not from the front, but from the side. From the other two raptors, you didn't even know were there. Because Velociraptor's a pack hunter, you see. He uses coordinated attack patterns. And he is out in force today. And he slashes at you with this 6-inch retractable claw, like a razor, on the middle toe. He doesn't bother to bite your jugular like a lion, say. No, no. He slashes at you here, or here.
Oh, well.
Or maybe across the belly, spilling your intestines. The point is, you are alive when they start to eat you. So, you know, try to show a little respect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, where's his mom and dad? Why wouldn't his mom be like, I'm sorry about him. I'll get him out of here.
Come get your kid.
Yeah. What a weird scene to, I mean, it's awesome because it gives you the impression of Grant already respecting the dinosaurs before he even knows that they're alive again. And also he gets a chance to, you know, pretend to gut and cut this kid's dick off with a Velociraptor claw. Yeah,
totally. That is that's my favorite performance in the whole movie, is the spiel with the raptor claw. Are you busting out that kid to show us? Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that.
I mean, like, can that we just kid, talk about that shirt and hat? That kid would be a fucking on Fairfax today. Fucking Tyler the Creator.
Why do I dress like that fucking kid? Oh no, I do dress like that kid.
I used to see this kid all the fucking time as an adult by the Upright Citizens Brigade by the Scientology Center when I first moved to Los Angeles.
I'm gonna space on the kid's name, but the main little boy in this, Joseph Mazzello. He works out at my gym in Universal City. And one day I felt like such a dork. I was wearing a Jurassic Park shirt and I was like lifting weights, and he looked at me and he caught me looking at him. And I just kind of went, I'm sorry, man. And he kind of smiled and like laughed. I was like, I'm fucking used to it, dude. I see that fucking dinosaur wherever I fucking go. But
he's like, I'm at the bottom of Universal Studios, for crying out loud.
Yeah. He's like, and then suspect. You know, when like when someone really famous, like, I'm going to go outside for a little bit just to get a couple of pats on the back. He works out right by Universal Studios. Yeah. He fucking knows what he's doing. Probably walks home just like looking around like, anyone want to fucking talk to me?
They play in the Jurassic Park theme when he's getting his car valeted.
Yeah. Bow, bow,
bow, bow. When he looked at you, you should have pretended to be like, what are you fucking looking at? The
fuck you looking at, dude? You don't like Jurassic Park movie fucking rules, dude? You fucking dork. Like, fucking just, he's like, oh, sorry. Nah, man, I'm just fucking with you. I'm trying to think now. I mean, I never understood how awesome Sam Jackson, all of his scenes in this movie are amazing. He steals every scene that he's in. And this is like, this is a year before Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Sam Jackson is officially about to become Sam. He already Jackson. Is really, really cool, but he's about to become.
He's already been in 200 films by this point.
Yeah. He totally has. I'm trying to think of, there's so many scenes that I love. Obviously the T-Rex, like you mentioned, Dan. Don't think I can watch Welcome to Jurassic Park without, if I'm really plugged into it, without getting emotional. It gets me every single time. That's like, if the chemistry of the movie comes to a perfect head, it's right there. It's the music, the visual, everything is just perfect. So that's for me is Welcome to Jurassic Park. What about you, Steve?
Right. That's right. When you get that musical cue too.
Yeah.
Like you get John Williams score finally, really comes in.
Is that the first time he hits it full?
Yeah. That's when the big loud one comes in.
Isn't that also when the helicopter scene's happening?
The helicopter scene builds it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's building. Da-da-da, and then he kind of lands down, and then it's like the jeeps are going through,
and then it's the whole.
Then it goes boom,
crescendo,
like it hits, boom. It does all of them at once,
and that's what I wanted to get to. First of all, there's an entire industry for the last 30 years now since this movie came out, of helicopter rides in fucking Hawaii.
You want to pick a nit, not one of them gets have you ever been on a helicopter? It's like almost impossible to not get nauseous. It's hard. It's awful. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant.
But I just think that like one of my like favorite things is from the helicopter ride to the jeeps, the glasses coming off, that whole sequence that just is it's gotta be 15 minutes long of all the way to that, to then them being like, yo, we want to get off this with Mr. DNA and the whole Mr. DNA thing, to BD Wong and the eggs, to then all the way to the sick, all the pacing to get us to like this wonderful, amazing, holy fuck, to then the T-Rex thing and the fucking systems down. And now all of a sudden it's that turn. Every single beat for beat, because Alex and I got on the phone earlier today and we were like, I wonder if we could just like go scene for scene, like just the two of us. And literally it was just like bam and then bam and then bam and then bam. Yeah. It just was all this pacing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it just, I can't select like, I mean, and then you get all the way through and to even just the green jello.
We haven't even gotten like, to, I want to, the where I was going to end this talk was like, what's the best dinosaur in this movie? Is it the T-Rex? Is it the Raptors?
We haven't even talked about the fucking Raptors, and they're
the craziest part.
When you guys were kids and you saw this movie and there was the big dinosaur craze after it, what was like your dinosaur?
For me, it was definitely a raptor. I mean, I didn't know that a Velociraptor existed before Jurassic Park. Obviously, every kid knows a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but Velociraptor was not something that I knew about until this movie came out. And that definitely took the cake. I mean, the scene of them in the kitchen, like the two raptors, like stalking them around all that, like that sealed it for me. Like when he puts his foot down and he starts clicking his claw on the ground and dude, it's so sick.
And the fact that it's a foot, all you're seeing is a foot and a claw.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's enough.
That's the point right there, is that that's a perfect example of how today with all the CGI and everything, they would just go, oh, we can show it. Why? And it's like, it's such more tension building when it's just that foot or just that claw. And I don't know.
Well, that's the big lesson learned from Jaws, right? That's his big lesson that he learned in Jaws, is like the monster you can't see is scarier than the one you can. So these raptors are always stalking and you're kind of like, oh, where are they? You're never really aware of the geography of what's happening. He even gets you with the mirror reflection. Like Spielberg gets you the first time. You're like, oh, like it's just masterful storytelling.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why it holds up too. And the CGI holds up like with all the, you know, the practical effects and everything, is that whoever, you know, when they storyboarded this movie, they did it so perfectly in the sense that they were like, okay, you're going to see this dinosaur. It's going to be a far shot. It's going to be through, you know, this is going to be a CGI dinosaur. It's going to be through rain. It's going to be from far away behind trees. It's going to be halfway, you know, covered up by something, because it keeps you from noticing flaws in it. Where if you watch like the rest of these, like the Jurassic Park movies or any CGI now, where they just put the monster right on the screen like that, there's nothing else to obstruct your view of this CGI monster, and your brain automatically knows that it's not real and not fake. And he uses so many awesome ways of working the CGI in with the practical effects, like using like looking through the windshield of the Jeep. Like when you see the T-Rex head is the practical one, and then it comes out, and then you see the CGI one walk through the screen, but it's one shot, but they just use the frame from the windshield to
break it when it goes around, and then you reveal the full. Yeah,
and it's such, and like you're saying, with like the tight script, like the storyboard also just had to be so tight because they had to know exactly what they were going to be doing in those shots. Like,
I'm sure they were so worried about how to keep the CGI in check. It was like, okay, we need to know every single shot, which is what blows my mind. The fact that you laid out earlier, Steve, which is like, what was it like? It's like 7 or 8 minutes of CGI, and then like 14 minutes of practical.
It's 14 practical and 9 CGI.
Okay. Like, it's wild, exactly what you said, Dan, to think about the breakdown of those storyboards and how precise that probably had to be. And for Spielberg to have the foresight working with the technology that he was working with before anyone really had is pretty amazing.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back. There's only 15 minutes total of dinosaurs in the film, 9 of which are Stan Winston's animatronics and 6 of which are ILM.
That's insane.
Are you kidding me? So that means now that brings us to like the classic Spielberg move, which is like what he does so well is that tight reaction shot. That's what it is. That's the trick is you. And again, we go back to your first point, Dan, what worked so well about this movie for you is the characters. The only way you can do that, make a movie about dinosaurs that is almost 2 hours long that has 15 minutes of fucking dinosaurs, is you have compelling acting and good characters to pull you through that. And wow, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's unreal.
We should all quit. You can keep making music, but Steve, we have to stop trying to make movies for a living. We have to stop. We're never going to get there. It's too, the mountain's too high, my friend.
Ain't no mountain high enough. No, I'm good. It's funny because I'm looking at the movie screen caps that like literally it's a screen cap of every frame of the movie.
Every visual effect shot.
It's insane as I'm scrolling through it to see the close-up you talk about. I mean, the movie literally pretty much opens on the close-up shot. Cut to trees brushing and like what the hell's going on.
Yep.
Back to like a little bit of a pullout that exposes a couple more heads. Like it, but then it's like cut to your calves guy and his close-up. It's just, I mean, he's in close-ups a lot.
Oh, that's the Spielberg close-up. That's the move. Everybody, the Spielberg close-up is where it's at.
There's a lot of really cool storytelling with like the camera angles too. Like you see a lot of really interesting, like at the beginning of the movie when they're, you know, they're looking at the what the hell is the dinosaur? Triceratops and the Velociraptors. The camera is like showing the people over the dinosaurs, like they're playing God, like they're in control. And then once all hell breaks loose, a lot of the shots are from under the people looking up, you know.
Right.
And it's just such cool cinematic storytelling with a lot of the camera angles and the film work they did with it. It just works so well.
The other crazy thing about this movie, and this is just to give Spielberg his, let's give him his just due and his snaps. I believe he was in post-production of Schindler's List. Or vice versa.
He was
in production.
He was filming Schindler's List, and then he would have to take an hour out of every day to just muster up the will to then go do essentially sit in a digital post room and talk on the phone to the editors and give notes and answer questions on like CGI dinosaurs and shit. And he's often quoted as saying like,
"It saved his life."
It about killed him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've actually heard him say quite literally, because Schindler's List was such an intense experience, if he didn't have Jurassic Park, it would have been next to impossible for him to complete that movie, because that, I mean, we all, have you ever, Dan, have you watched the Spielberg documentary on HBO?
No.
Oh, you absolutely should. It's really good. It's all like, it's basically his life through his films, and it's called cool. Spielberg on HBO.
He has phenomenal sweaters and scarves.
Yeah. Steve isn't the biggest fan of it. He thinks it's a little surface, but I like it. I think it's pretty good. And it is a little surface, but
yeah, I'll watch it for sure.
There's a chunk where he's talking about like, I'm in the trenches making this. That's the thing with Schindler's, was one of these movies where like he wanted the camera and that's not his style. And he would like grab it and he would get in there and kind of move around almost to like put himself into those horrible situations. And he was talking about doing that. And then like Steve said, at night, it's like, okay. And then I'd go watch like a T-Rex smash a Jeep. And it's like, you know, this Dan, as an artist and a creative, how hard it can be to multitask when you're in those modes. Like it's hard enough for me to imagine like working on something like that and then jumping over to something like that. Like imagine, have you ever had to do something like that where you're like working on like a 4-year strong record and then you're jumping over to some other crazy artistic endeavor? Have you ever tried something that bold?
Not too much where I'm like working on them simultaneously, but even still, just, you know, when you're working on a record, going from song to song, because a lot of times you're not just like concentrating on one song and finishing it. You're bouncing from, you know, guitar on this song to vocals on this song, back to bass on this, because you're multitasking in different rooms and stuff. And just getting in even the headspace just to go from one song to another song is just a really difficult thing. So the idea that he's making, you know, this, you know, black and white Holocaust movie at the same time that he's making this, you know, wide pop culture dinosaur movie, is just, the fact that he made two masterpieces doing that at the same time is bananas.
Yeah. It's it deserves, as we sort of like close out our conversation of Jurassic Park, it's like Spielberg also deserves the just due at the end, where you're like, also, let's not forget, it's Steven fucking Spielberg. And this is, I feel like this is the movie, at least for me, where every time I revisit it, I go, God, he really is the greatest director of all time. Like, I can't, like, and this is no shade on Indiana Jones. I really dig the indie movies, but they don't click like Jurassic Park and Jaws do for me. I never found myself kind of being like, oh, I gotta fucking throw on Raiders. I think I fully watched Raiders for the first time maybe when I was like 25. I always watched Last Crusade with my dad, but I never really Indy was always a movie that I watched, but I'd always like get up and walk away after like halfway through. And I know that's such blasphemy. They're such good movies, but not Jurassic Park.
No,
that is like, that's holy ground. I give this movie its respect.
It's funny that you equate with Raiders, because, you know, this movie was handed to Harrison and he was like, no.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Sam Neill is quoted as saying, I'm just doing a Harrison Ford impression.
Yeah. I feel like
the hat.
He was
in the hat.
This is like this is fugitive era Harrison. He's swinging for Oscars at this point a little bit. He's kind of like.
Well, and I think that his whole thing was, I've already done the sort of.
Can you imagine being able to say, been there, done that on Steven Spielberg?
Exactly. Like, I've already been that guy.
Yeah, I don't need another summer blockbuster. Let's.
I've already.
He's like, ugh, John Williams. God damn it!
I'm gonna go fly my plane.
He's gonna write a theme about me. Oh God,
I've already got four of those from him.
I gotta roll this joint, and I gotta get on my my bike and go for.
Callista, turn the music down.
I love that. I love that man. I love Steven Spielberg. Dan, buddy, this is our first time meeting. I got to tell you, it's like hanging with an old friend talking about Jurassic Park with you. We got to have you back on.
Yes, sir.
I would love to.
An absolute pleasure. we didn't really get a chance to talk about your band. Maybe we can schedule a proper interview, have you come on and kind of introduce our listeners to Four Year Strong and they get to know you a little better. But if they do want to support you and find your stuff online, where can they find you?
You can find us on fouryearstrong.com, on Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere where you want to find us, you'll find us. We're pretty out there. You can find us anywhere.
So I have a question. I've never been able to just ask this of a musician. What's sure. better, listening on Apple Music or Spotify, or is it so small that it doesn't matter?
Yeah, I think that from a musician standpoint, I think there's like a little bit more of a payout from Apple Music, but it's you know, it's two sides of the same coin, really. It's not that different.
Buy a vinyl is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Go to a show, buy a shirt, buy a vinyl. That's the way you support for sure.
Well, I'm a big fan. Anybody listening, you should absolutely check out Four Year Strong. They're amazing. Are you guys going on tour soon? Are you on the Pure Noise tour?
We are. Yep, we're going out Ooh. In September on the Pure Noise tour. Very excited about that. State champs, real friends. It's gonna be a good time.
Yeah, man. I think is Just Friends on that too?
Yep, Just Friends.
That always makes me laugh when I see Just Friends and Real Friends. I'm like, you need one more friend. Rule of three. We need one more. Maybe Randy Newman can just fucking come on and just do You've Got a Friend in Me, and he'll just like open the whole show.
He needs a band called Bad Friends, and then that would really, you know, you're just friends, then you're real friends, and then you're bad friends.
Yeah. Bad friends. Steve-O, where can the people find you online?
You can find me at Rex Mann and look me up on Letterboxd. Also, listen, if you're enjoying the Midnight Movie Clubs, why don't you have your own Midnight Movie Club and tag us online or, you know, show your support, hit up the website, get a Midnight Movie Club shirt, and, I don't know, join the club.
Cahill just bought one. Former BSR guest Cahill bought a Midnight Movie Club shirt. I forgot to ship it. He had to wait 68 days, and wow. I felt really bad.
And we
I
didn't was even like, get a single oh email. My. Wow, that's really nice.
And nothing says buy a shirt like you'll have to wait 68 days for me to ship it out of my my bedroom. Man. I was like, oh, shit, Cale, I'm so sorry. I saw you bought a shirt. And there was like a problem where like Squarespace like changed with our shipping software, so like wasn't updating. And then I was like, oh, shit, I gotta ship some orders. I feel like an asshole. You guys can find me on Letterboxd. I'm on Twitter, but I'm trying not to fuck around on social media. Just find Four Year Strong and support musicians. That's more important than liking my tweets. With that being said, we'll see you next time on BSR. Later.
What's up, guys? I'm here at Pixar. I'm about to go in, start working on a collaboration project with Pixar.
Just kidding, man. I don't play that soft little baby shit, man. That's Satan all day, that evil Satan stuff, heavy metal shit, man. I don't fuck around with little baby shit like that.